The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.
We build things up so much in our life that we frequently get disappointed. Well, these conference finals have been awful.
Graham, and there's been one game that was within 13 points.
I mean, we built them up and got excited about both of them, really. It was the first time in a while, Lance, I've been legitimately excited about both conference finals, thinking, hey, these could be terrific series. And they've been awful. Awful. Almost unwatchable.
You're right. You're right. And I mean, we wait days to get to this weekend, and we get a 30-point win and a 41-point win.
Just terrible.
Yep. With nothing else on.
No, I mean, unless you want to get into hockey, which I haven't watched hockey all year.
Go Vegas.
Yeah. Hopefully, you watch some softball, which is fantastic.
I love the sport.
It falls right into a window. It was some fantastic stuff. I mean, Auburn's lost to Florida State on Saturday. A walk-off inside the park home
gun
run.
To head, I have no idea who won.
Florida State.
Okay.
How do you get an inside the park homer? What'd you do?
Somebody falls.
The fields are so short. I don't know.
Slicing ball down the right field line.
Okay.
Auburn player dies for it, just misses a diving catch.
Right.
Gets past her, rolls to the corner.
Well, even if he gets past her, she's got to be on the ground squalling or something. I mean, you get up. I mean, the fence is 180, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's 200.
The fences are
My bad. I shorted them 20.
The fences are so short, I don't know how you get it inside the park. Homer,
the bases are three steps.
How fast is this girl?
She's fast.
Yeah.
She's fast. But it was an inside the park play at the plate.
On the ground squalling.
2-1. Then Jack State eliminated them.
That's right. They did. Go Gamecocks. And Big C, little OCKS.
Florida State moved on.
Could John Daly have legged a double on that play?
He'd have stopped it first and subbed out.
Probably not. He'd stopped it first to smoke a cigarette.
No joke.
Alabama moves on to the 14th regional. But these NBA's finals right now. Curry was back, and that's
a big story.
There is intrigue, LT, because Brown and I were talking last night when I was coming back from Tuscaloosa, and I said, I get so sick of doing another show of it's over, it's over, it's over. Tomorrow is going to have to be another it's over.
Here's the good news. Okay, so look, we said that before, even with Houston winning game two. And let's say they're able to steal one of these next two games.
But if they steal game four, which is all they have to do, if they win this next game, it's not over.
But how do we believe that when the Warriors now have won an NBA record 16th consecutive home postseason game and they win it by 41? Are we really supposed to believe within 48 hours you can turn that around?
Because someday Tennessee football will beat Alabama football again.
Well, that is true.
Don't last forever.
Yeah, but those take years.
And Jim, you just can't look. I mean, it had to be. I mean, I don't know what happened in game two, Lance. I guess it was Houston hit their shots. Maybe home court had something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Houston's a really good team.
Well,
again, I just don't think they're good enough to beat Golden State.
I agree.
In Oracle right now with the level Golden State's playing at, and especially when Steph Curry 7-for-7 in the third quarter goes for 18 points. When Steph Curry's on, Durant's not going to be off. He's just that good. But what I was going to say, Dunaway, I mean, the good news is on the other side of the bracket, we do have a little intrigue. Although game three was awful. As far as in blowout terms, with the Cavaliers winning by 30, I mean, the Cavaliers are a good, healthy 6.5-point favorite tonight. They win that game. I mean, we got a 2-2 series.
That's right. Everybody doing what they're supposed to, winning at home. They play tonight, 7:30 on ESPN, with Boston up 2-1.
But what we've been sucked into in these finals, these conference finals, are watching for the individual performances. If you watched last night, it was to see Steph Curry. If you watched game three in the East, it was to see LeBron James. I mean, that's really what it's boiled down to is the games aren't enjoyable because they are blowouts. You're just watching for the individual performances. And that, you got one last night from Steph. I mean, that was tremendous, man. In the third quarter, that was old school Steph.
And the unfortunate thing is we lived for the Western Conference Finals this year. Nobody was really talking about the NBA Finals. It was all about Houston and Golden State. This was going to be your true championship. When you have your true championship in Game 3 getting run by 41 points, I mean, because even if we have a little intrigue in the East, whoever comes out of the East, do we really believe they're going to compete with Golden State?
Not that Golden State team last night. Now, that Golden State team last night, that's the one you can argue against the Bulls or old school Celtics, whoever you want to
You're
argue.
Right.
That the Showtime Lakers, that Golden State team last night is as good as has ever played in the NBA.
Pimlico and all the rain and fog.
Did you see some of the videos coming out of there?
Unbelievable. The infield?
Yeah, I'm just talking about the wrestling, the fights, women. Now, the closest I ever got to that was Guns N' Roses. And Rockstar, you might have been a little too young for that. It was 1991.
I would have had a huge panic attack at the fields or whatever.
Yeah, so it was at the Birmingham Race Course, and there was a lot of rain before. Skid Row opened for Guns N' Roses, and so we got there early. I mean, it was a ton of people just tailgating all day long, and you know, by the time we got to the track, I mean, it was like what you saw at Pimlico over the weekend, and people were mud wrestling, and it was the messiest I've ever been.
Now,
you know, head to toe, totally covered in mud, which most people were that were at the Birmingham Race Course. I think it was May of 1991.
I think that infield is known for that in any year.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's kind of a debaucherous infield, right? It is. It's a little bit like the infield at Talladega in horse racing. Because they've got one thing, I've seen videos from years past, where they've got these portalettes lined up, and you run across the top of the portajohns while people throw beer cans at you. Yep. And your goal is to try to make it to the end of the portajohns without getting knocked off by a beer can.
As one of the other guys is to knock guy off with beer
cans. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a game they play.
And every time you see a bottle fly through.
I mean, that is, I mean, that's as weird as it gets right there. So
those are full beer cans.
Yeah, too. Absolutely. Yeah. Enough to knock you out. You throw rain and mud in with it, and it's just gonna amplify everything. And then the fog during the race. I actually watched the race. The fog was crazy, man.
The poor announcer. How did he do that?
I know, he's good.
He nailed it. Binoculars.
I thought the camera work from NBC, maybe they couldn't do anything with this. When they were coming around, final turn, going into home stretch, camera work was awful. I was totally lost.
They were trying to find the picture. Because justified for a second, it was interesting.
He struggled. I mean, he was pushed. You know, it was the Magic.
Good Magic.
Yeah, Good Magic pushed him. But then Good Magic fades at the end there.
Yep.
And you really had three horses that pushed Justified.
So it's that next race, the Belmont, in a couple of weeks, that is the longest of the tracks.
Where they have to keep going a little bit further.
Right. Yeah, I'm not so sure Justified's going to be able to pull this off.
Oh, yeah?
And see, I'm just the opposite. By the time we get there now, we've talked about this the other day, these people protect their interests so much, we may have... It may be justifying four of their horses by the time we get to Belmont.
Yeah, but I don't know how important, well, I guess for Justify for future earnings, it's very important for him to win the Triple Crown. But as far as ratings, I mean, everybody's all in now. Because you have an opportunity to win Triple Crown.
Yeah. He's a special horse, unbeaten, and I guess he would win this and retire unbeaten. That's probably what they'll do.
Yeah, you wouldn't run him again after that. I mean,
can you imagine retiring what he would be 6-0 at that particular point?
Yeah.
Pretty short career.
Yeah.
And you know what happens to horses? He's undefeated for the rest of his life after that, my friend.
That's why he wants to be undefeated, man.
Yeah, that's games that in Major League Baseball you don't win. So Marlins lead the Braves 9-4, entering the bottom of the ninth. Entering Sunday, teams have been 0-208 when trailing by 5-plus runs in the ninth inning or later. 0-208.
8 years ago on the same day, the Braves, as you saw on SportsCenter, the Braves came back and beat the Reds with a walk-off grand slam late in the game. So a big one for the Braves. Dansby Swanson with the clutch hit. Remember, just a few years ago, he was the number one overall draft pick, so that team is so young.
Baseball might be the most difficult sport to do that in. Because if you think about it in baseball, in any other sport...
To come back?
Yeah, back like that. Because... In any other sport, your defense could score points for you. You know what I'm saying?
But you take away runs. Like I can hit the ball in the nails.
Yeah.
But it goes right at the left fielder.
I know, but if I'm down 8-0, I'm limited at bats, obviously. I've got limited possessions.
But there's no clock.
There is no clock. But my defense could score for me in football. I mean, that's when you see a comeback like that in football, generally there's been a scoop and score, a pick six, or a kick return involved. In basketball, your defense could score for you.
Basketball's all runs.
Yeah,
so surprising in basketball.
I almost think it's easier to do in baseball.
Really?
Totally opposite. I almost think it's easier to do in baseball than the other way around.
Oh, see, I think basketball would be the easiest, and I kind of agree with Brown. And we see it a lot with two outs. I mean, yesterday with the Braves, after two outs, it was 9-5. Atlanta had a runner on first. I mean, the Braves' win expectancy at that point was 0.5% or 1-200, if you look at it like that.
I don't know, Dunaway. It seems like it's hard to do in baseball. But, I mean, the Braves did it, so good for them.
Hey, look, it's hard to doubt that team right now.
It is.
I'm starting to think they're going to win the East, and here's why. As a Nationals fan, obviously I've monitored this division closer than any division, the Nationals cannot stay healthy. Over the last 2 years, it has been one injury after another one. They lose Howie Kendrick over the weekend to an Achilles tear. He's done for the season. Looks like Adam Eaton probably is done for the season. Ryan Madsen and Matt Wieters are on the DL. They haven't had Daniel Murphy all year. This is a team that cannot stay healthy. So I'm not sure the Nationals are going to be able to win that division.
Hey, the Braves might be the best team in the NL.
They may be.
I mean, going into the season, everybody would have thought it would have been the Dodgers, but the Dodgers, you know, sitting five games back of the Diamondbacks, who are banged up right now. The Diamondbacks aren't scaring anyone. Milwaukee's been a nice story.
I mean, the Braves have great offense. How would you grade their pitching?
Better good? Than advertised, yeah.
Good or great? Not great.
No, starting, not great.
Starting pitching's been
good.
Surprising.
Yeah, surprising. I mean, this Newcomb kid, you know, he kind of got off to a rough start, but he's been really good. I mean, you would always rather have great pitching over great offense. Great pitching is going to take you on the long haul in baseball more than great offense.
But this offense has been so dominant. I mean, you look at them right now, okay, they've won 9 of 12, and they've got an NL best 88 runs scored this season in the seventh inning or later. So they're getting clutch runs.
Scores a lot late, and as Paul points out on Twitter at Jock's Roundtable, the Braves have 119 two-out runs scored. No one else in Major League has 100. So with two outs, they're delivering the clutch hits. That makes a big difference.
So 119 two run outs.
Yep.
The Marlins only have 160 runs scored.
Period. Yeah.
So the Braves have almost as many runs with two outs as the Marlins have all year. That's insane.
Putting your football together for next year, your magazine, we try to get it out as quick as we can in the summertime. I like to have it usually July 4th weekend.
Oh, it's normally this week for Lindy's and Athlon's.
This week?
I think so. I've
Memorial Day weekend?
In the past, our buddy Lynn Scarborough, who works with Lindy's, has brought them to us at the SEC baseball tournament before.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
so right. It's normally this week, and I think Athlon's pretty close too. Now, Phil Steele's a little bit later.
So you get all those trying to get it nailed down and all that, and all of a sudden you have Joe Burrow transferring to LSU, and he's going to be the starter?
Yep.
That could change up your win. They were 6.5 in the win total. Does that Joe Burrow make them go over that?
I don't think. I think they've got a more viable option now at quarterback. I think Joe Burrow will ultimately win that job, but I don't know if it puts him over that.
If nothing else, it changes your write-up about them, though, because he's going to definitely battle for that starting job.
But do you see them at 6.5 as the win total right now?
That's what the Vegas win total was.
Well, I will tell you, that is a low bar for LSU football. If they go under the number, they go 6-6, there's no chance Orgeron survives that.
Take a gander at that schedule, Lance. Not the easiest schedule in the world.
Yeah, but you can't find 6 wins on there or 7 wins?
Well, if you lose to Miami in the opener.
And I think they'll be underdogs.
Well, hang on. Let me read this, and I'll just read it, and you give me the ones you feel confident about.
You start
about.
Counting? Let me read that, bro.
All right, you go, Jim.
Yeah, if you haven't had a chance to check out Line of Fire Up in Moody, now is the time. They have the largest selection of all your favorite firearm brands, as well as knives, accessories, apparel, and more. Their kickoff summer sales event is right around the corner. Check out Line of Fire on Facebook or Instagram, or the gram as we call it. That's Line of Fire on Facebook or Instagram, or go online today at lineoffireguns.com.
Okay, so you're looking for 6 wins here, Lance. You ready?
I'm looking for 7.
Okay, you're looking for 7 wins here. I want your
6 wins is going to get you fired.
Yeah, 7 may. Miami and Arlington.
I think that's a loss.
Loss.
Southeast Louisiana's a win at Auburn.
Loss.
That's a loss.
La Tech's a win, hosting Ole Miss. You'll make that a win, right? All right, so you're 3-2. At Florida, October 6th.
I think win. That's a loss.
Win.
Okay. Georgia at home the very next week, October 13th.
That's a loss.
All right, so what's your record right now?
Well, Dunaway's got them at 4-3. I got them at 3-4.
All right, Mississippi State's your next game.
Loss.
I'll go win there.
But I mean, listen to that stretch, though. At Florida, host Georgia, host Mississippi State. That's a tough stretch. Bye week, you host Alabama.
Loss.
November 10th, you're at Arkansas.
Win.
November 17th, you got Rice. That's a win. And then you wrap up Thanksgiving night at Texas A&M.
Loss. 6-6.
I mean, you can see a path to 6 losses pretty easily there, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I'll give them an A&M win. I'll give them 7-5. I'm like you, Brown. I don't know if 7-5 gets a done forward run.
I'm not sure.
Tua Tagovailoa or Tagovailoa at home with Simone Eli of CBS 42 commenting on Tua's comment that he thought about leaving, and now he's trying to explain to Simone what he meant by those comments.
You know, what I meant was, when you feel like you want to kind of quit, if you want to give in, I think the more you kind of put your head in the ground, in the dirt, you know, and you keep working and pushing, trying to push through it, I think that's when you start to see the better of the end result, you know, and I kind of I kind of got the wrong end when I seen it on ESPN. You know, I think they most definitely took it out of context, saying if I didn't play, you know, I would have left and whatnot.
That's Tua with Simone Eli on CBS 42. You can see the whole weekend of coverage from the islands on CBS 42.com.
It sounded so peaceful in the background.
It did.
The
it
waves
sounded like
crashing.
The ocean, yeah.
Yes.
We should start doing our interviews here in the studio just with that wave sound in the background.
I don't want to put words in Tua Tagovailoa's mouth. I got to address something with the rock star. I don't want to put words in Tua Tagovailoa's mouth. But I think what he's saying, I think what he means is not that he was taken out of context, but that everybody's focusing on the part he doesn't want them to focus on. He doesn't want them to focus on the part that I was going to leave if I didn't play. He wants them to focus on, I didn't make that poor decision. I was rewarded with playing time. Now I'm sticking around. I persevere. But obviously the national media is going to focus on him for the first time saying, I was going to leave if I didn't play. Again, it's not a new story. Like Lance said, or you, one of you, it's like the third iteration of the story. We've seen it time and time again, but it's the first time it has come from the mouth of Tua Tagovailoa publicly. So I think what he means is, I hate it that the media has focused on that part. Well, that's naturally what they're going to focus on. I don't know what.
See, I heard it differently.
What did you hear?
It sounded like he is trying to say he really didn't mean he was going to transfer. Can we hear it one more time, Rockstar?
Notice the waves in the background.
No, this is his explanation after the fact, but the initial thing was, he was.
Yeah, but listen to the explanation.
Okay. Well, yeah, we can all explain anything afterward, in fact.
But I heard what Lance heard.
Here's two again. Oh, yeah, the explanation makes perfect sense.
You know, what I meant was when you feel like you want to kind of quit, if you want to give in, I think the more you kind of put your head in the ground, in the dirt, you know, and you keep working and pushing, trying to push through it, I think that's when you start to see the better of the end result, you know, and I kind of got the wrong end when I seen it on ESPN. You know, I think they most definitely took it out of context, saying if I didn't play, you know, I would have left and whatnot.
That's what you're saying, Lance, is that they took that part out of context.
Yeah.
I never was saying if I didn't play.
And then
I
guess,
and
that was Simone that did the interview, right?
Yes.
I don't know if she followed up by saying, well, if you wouldn't have played, would you have transferred?
You can see it all on CBS42.com. I watched his message that he gave at the party, the community party that he was at, and it was held by his pastors. And my takeaway was, first of all, you know, gives his testimony, really a nice testimony, and he calls people to the altar afterwards to accept Christ. But teammates made the trip to Hawaii with him, not just AL.com and CBS 42, but Najee Harris is out there, Leatherwood, another Alabama player is there.
Well, if you could, would you not?
Oh, heck yeah. In a heartbeat.
Tight-knit little group there. And, you know, it was Najee and Najee's mom who had become friends with the Tagovailoas. It was an interesting trip. I really don't understand how it became such a media thing. But, you know, I was glad I got to see the coverage of it nonstop over the weekend.
I mean, for a guy that didn't play much, boy, I mean, people are following him.
Yeah, they love – and I tweeted the picture out that Simone had sent. He's in his traditional garb for the ceremony, his wardrobe for the ceremony, very Hawaiian. But the line to get an autograph for him looks like it could be in Tuscaloosa. I mean, the folks in Hawaii are so in love with Tua and right now Alabama football because Tua is their quarterback.
Okay, I don't know if you guys have the answer to this, but who is the most famous athlete to ever come out of the island?
I was just thinking about it.
Is
I
it
mean,
Teo?
Did he come from Hawaii?
Yeah.
I thought he was Samoan. Was he from Hawaii?
I thought he was Hawaii.
Well, Tua's Samoan, too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I thought he was literally from Samoa.
I don't know. We'll check. Most famous
but
Hawaiian
But would Manti
athlete?
Te'o, would he be
no,
that guy?
No, you're right. You're right. It was. Why? Is it not Mariota? He's bigger than Te'o, right?
Yeah, Mariota did win the Heisman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is now an NFL quarterback.
Who's won a playoff game.
I'll go Marcus Mariota.
Yeah,
right
I would agree with Brown on that, too.
Yeah, Te'o is from Hawaii. It's a two-part question for you guys. I've got the, 13...
Typical Brown. You told me a one-part question, now it's a two-part question.
Power 5 coaches. 13 new Power 5 coaches.
All right.
So as I run through these, I just want a yes or no. Is this their final destination?
Okay.
Okay, yes or no on that. And then at the end, you tell me of these 13 who will win the most games at this stop. So all 13 of these guys, who's going to end up with the most wins, you think? So first, yes or no, final destination. We've got Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M.
I think it is.
Yes.
Scott Frost, Nebraska.
Yes.
Well, it's hard to go home to your school and then leave it for a better job, isn't it?
Yep. I would agree. I say yes.
Chip Kelly, UCLA.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know if that is his final stop. I'm 50-50 on that one.
Dan Mullen, Florida.
Yes.
Yes.
You're not going to get a better job than that, are you? Kevin Sumlin, Arizona.
No.
Willie Taggart, Florida State.
Yes.
Wow, we're going yes a lot, but I agree.
Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee.
No.
Chad Morris, Arkansas.
No.
No.
Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State.
No.
Mario Cristobal, Oregon.
No.
Jonathan Smith, Oregon State.
Maybe.
I don't know. How do we grade Matt Luke? Do you consider this his first year or do you consider last year? I mean, this is his first year as the full-time head coach.
No, put him in. He was okay. Interim last year.
Matt Luke, Ole Miss?
Yes.
Yes. And Herm Edwards, Arizona State.
Yes.
It's got to be yes. Lord. Yes.
By the way, on Oregon, before we answer your next question,
okay.
Killing it in recruiting, by the way.
Well, that's what Mario Cristobal's really good at.
Cristobal, of course, gets Dallas Warmack, uh-huh. Helping out Nick Saban, getting the whole Auburn-Tennessee thing off his plate. So Dallas Warmack goes to Oregon. He's got 2 years left to play as a grad transfer. He can play immediately. And they pick up for 2019 the number one all-purpose back from down in Southern California. Sean Dollar goes to Oregon. And his teammate, who's the nation's number six cornerback, and Jeremiah Criddle. So if you think Mario Cristobal is just going out there to be a placeholder for a while, you're wrong. He's planning on staying a while at Oregon.
Yeah.
Now ask your next question.
The coaches, so that's the 13 new Power 5 coaches, unless I miss somebody. The 13 new Power 5 coaches. Give me the coach you think gets the most win at this stop. The most wins at this stop.
I am going to go with Dan Mullen.
That's who I went with.
Yeah.
Is that you, Dunaway? Is it that easy?
I wrote Dan Mullen. My second choice will be Jimbo Fisher, Chip Kelly, Scott Frost.
Okay, so you're doing that order.
Take that back.
Now we go Dan Mullen 1, Scott Frost 2, Willie Taggart 3, Jimbo Fisher 4, Chip Kelly 5.
Yeah, Willie Taggart jumped out at me that you left out there.
No, that's why I went back. So I'm going to go Dan Mullen, Jimbo Fisher, Willie Taggart, Chip Kelly, Scott Frost.
I got your same top five, but in a different order.
Yeah.
But I think Mullen seems to be the obvious here.
Yeah, I think it's that easy with him at number one. I was interested to see who you might consider behind him. I know Lance's feelings on Fisher.
I think Mullen might be 8 wins this year, but I think moving forward it might be about 10 every year.
Taggart is going to be uber successful at Florida State.
So you think we're back to maybe like when it was Bowden and Spurrier, where Florida and Florida State are really good again?
I do. Mullen's going to be really good. Jimbo, they're going to have to stick with him because of the contract for a long time. That's going to stack up some wins. And then Chip Kelly and Scott Frost.
We've never seen a time when Georgia, Florida, and Florida State are all good, though, have we? And that seems to be something that's coming.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem with Dan Mullen, but for Willie, it's the same thing, but with Clemson. You know, same division, rivalry game.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere.
And Clemson and Georgia don't look like they're going anywhere, so Dan and Willie got to overcome that.
Well, especially in South Georgia and the Florida Panhandle, Florida State and Georgia butt heads for a lot of football players. So, Lance, you're right. Seeing them good at the same time with strong recruiting staffs at the same time,
okay, of all
that's
going to
be fascinating.
If I put the over-under 1.5 of these coaches win national championships, would you go over or under?
Under. I think Dan Mullen would be the only one I'd have huge confidence in at these stops.
I think I would lean under, but if I had to say another, it would be Willie Taggart.
Yeah, that's the other one I was going to say.
If he's successful, then they're going to be in the playoffs.
Who, Mullen or Taggart?
Yeah. Because it's Florida State and it's the ACC.
Yeah. I mean, Taggart would have been my second choice, but if I had to bet an over-under, I'd bet the under. That's amazing. 13 guys and you'd bet under 1.5.
Nate says, what has Willie Taggart done? Am I missing something?
We don't know. He's never been a place long enough.
Always had crap programs.
He has. And he's always, I shouldn't say always, but he built South Florida up and then bolted to Oregon, and he only did the 1 year at Oregon, so we don't know. I mean, Willie Taggart is a fascinating study, but everybody thinks the world of the guy.
Ranking the current SEC coaches by their career accomplishments. This is a rarity where I'm not saying look at the present or look into the future. I literally want you to look in the rearview mirror on what has been accomplished as a football coach, head coach, and assistant coach, and rank the current SEC coaches by their accomplishments. And I'm interested where you would go after Nick Saban at number one.
I would go Jimbo at number two because he's the only other guy that's got a national championship.
Well, I mean, you got to factor in assistants too. Kirby Smart has done a lot as an assistant coach and now at Georgia. He's got an SEC championship. There are others that have done some things. Dan Mullen, as an assistant, has done a lot.
Jimbo's won a national championship as an assistant.
That's true.
I went Jimbo too, yeah, as well. I was just making a point that not just his head coach national championship. I don't think it's cut and dry. I think you have to factor in what Jimbo was able to do at LSU too to get him to number two. But I go him at two as well.
Yeah, I went Jimbo too. I actually went Malzahn at three. It was really tight between him and Kirby. But I lean Malzahn. I mean, he is a guy that has won an SEC championship. He's played for a national championship like Kirby.
You know, I had the same.
Won a national championship as an assistant.
I had the same internal debate as you because Kirby Smart and Gus Malzahn have a lot of the same resume.
Yep.
Gus has just done it longer as a head coach. So you kind of heads towards that, even though it hasn't been a smashing success for Gus Malzahn as a head coach. He's had some average years mixed in there.
I, too, went with Gus.
I did, too.
Gus third.
I'm just saying, when you consider what Kirby Smart did as an assistant, which you have to do on this resume.
Right.
Kirby Smart is the most successful assistant on this entire list.
Yes.
Nobody's done more as an assistant coach than Kirby Smart has on this entire, in the entire SEC. And then he has backed it up with a national championship game appearance as a head coach. So you got to give that pretty strong consideration, but I still went Gus Malzahn slightly ahead of him.
I see. I have Kirby four. You've got Kirby four. You've got Kirby four.
I do.
Yep. Who's five?
Now it gets interesting.
I got Dan Mullen.
That's who I put there.
Yep. I got Dan Mullen five and Jeremy Pruitt six.
That's who I put six. I don't think we can discount what Dan Mullen has done for 9 years as a head football coach. Longer than that, yeah, whatever the number was at Mississippi State.
And don't forget, and it's easy to, what he did as a coordinator too, Lance. I mean, he was with Urban Meyer.
It's not easy to. In fact, with him being back at Florida, I think it only has capitalized, underscore highlighted what he did as a coordinator at Florida and even back to what he did at Utah with Alex Smith at quarterback.
I just say it's easy to forget because he's been a head coach so long. Yeah. And he's done enough as a head coach that you don't have to lean on coordinator accomplishments, but the guy's a heck of an accomplished coordinator.
And
as a
coordinator at Utah, they were undefeated.
Yeah. So, I mean, his time with Urban Meyer, I think Dan Mullen, I mean, he's fifth on this list and he's been the coach of Mississippi State. I think it says a lot.
Yeah. So that's our top six is identical to each other.
Did Lance have Jeremy Pruitt six as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
No, yeah. I had Muschamp six.
Ooh, so, over Jeremy Pruitt?
See, yeah. I think Pruitt's a more accomplished assistant coach than Muschamp.
Oh, there's no doubt. But when you look at Muschamp, I mean, this is a guy that took Florida to a Sugar Bowl. This is a guy that has had South Carolina back-to-back winning seasons now.
Yeah, but I put what Pruitt did as the coordinator at Florida State, winning that national championship. Then he had a good run at Georgia. And then he was the coordinator on an Alabama national championship. That passes to me what Will has done as a coordinator and a head coach.
Where would you, and I struggle with this one, Lance, because I got Muschamp seventh right behind Pruitt. But if you just rated, let's ignore Will Muschamp coordinator for a second. Rate Will Muschamp head coach. Give me a letter grade.
I would go a B minus or a C plus.
Because you have to grade that time at Florida on a curve. You're at Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I wanted to say, Brown. On any resume, you could have a great job. And you can have good moments at that job, but if you get fired from that job, that looks bad on the resume.
That's right, and that's what happened to him. He had one great moment and then got fired.
Yeah, I would say C minus at Florida, maybe a D plus, but then I think you got to give him a B plus what he's done at South Carolina.
I don't disagree with you on that.
So
it
far,
does,
so good.
Does average out to a C. So that's what made him complicated for me, grading his head coach. And then Muschamp as an assistant was a really good assistant, but he's got no championships to show for it, does he? As a coordinator.
I mean, you have to go all the way back to asparagus to find anything wrong on Jeremy Pruitt's resume.
Yeah, you're right.
Right? I mean, what has he done? Where has he been and he hasn't won?
Yeah, but I guess I'm not giving him enough credit because he's never coached a game as the head guy.
And that's what made it difficult. But I did hedge him in front of Will Muschamp.
But I would have flipped that around with you guys. I would have had Muschamp at six and Pruitt at
so
seven.
So we've had a remarkable amount of agreement through seven coaches.
I know, and I thought this was going to be a lot more difficult.
Well,
go to the bottom.
I think it's about to.
Okay.
Because this is tough for me.
Yeah, it gets down to a lot of I put dead last.
I put Matt Luke, and look, I like him. He was great on our show, but give me his great accomplishment. He won an Egg Bowl, right?
That's a good start for him.
But as an assistant, he wasn't even a coordinator, Jim.
Okay, who's he behind?
Well, I'll put him dead last.
I mean, he's behind Barry Odom. Who's he's behind ahead of him? Okay. Derek Mason.
Well, I had Ed Orgeron 13th. I had Matt Luke 14th. I had Ed Orgeron 13th. And I'll say the same thing of Ed Orgeron. Great his head coaching career for me.
Well, I mean, Ole Miss was an F.
It was a disaster.
But USC, his interim time there was a B+.
Okay, well, I kind of ignored that. That was
well,
an interim.
You can't ignore that.
I mean,
well,
it was only eight games.
It's an 8-game interim. I ignore his interim time at LSU
well,
as well.
I think without those 8 games, LSU never gives him a shot.
Okay, but give me, what's his grade at LSU?
That's a C-minus right now.
Okay, so we've got an F and a C-minus at two SEC jobs.
Well, don't leave off the B+.
Anybody out there keeping up?
We'll go B+. You got to factor but you,
I don't factor in interim. I mean, maybe I graded this incorrectly, but an interim coach to me is a placeholder. I'm not going to give you a grade based on being an interim coach. It's not a program you've built. It's not a program you've coached. It's somebody else's work that you're turning in. So I ignore interim.
Okay, so we agreed on the top seven. I mean, would you guys, did you have somebody listed at number eight?
Well, I had Chad Morris.
See, I had Mark Stoops, but I had Chad Morris right behind him.
You and I flip Chad Morris and Mark Stoops. Here's my case on Chad Morris. Again, I think sometimes we forget how good an assistant he was for Dabo at Clemson.
So they went to a different level after he left.
They did, but that
he
offense,
was viewed for a moment as maybe the hottest assistant out there.
When he took the SMU job, he was, Lance. And he maybe jumped a little too quickly at SMU, but, I mean, he had SMU. That was a bad program he took over. And I thought they would do a little bit better, but when you look at what he did, that was a pretty good job he did at SMU. I don't know what he's going to do at Arkansas, but I think Chad Morris is a good football coach. So I had him number eight. I had Mark Stoops number nine.
Okay, just run through the rest of your list.
Okay, Barry Odom 10, Joe Moorhead 11, Derek Mason 12, Ed Orgeron 13, Matt Luke 14.
Moorhead behind Odom, huh?
That's a coin flip. I mean, Moorhead, he was an assistant for 2 years.
He was a head guy at Fordham, though, and had a lot of success.
He was.
Yeah, I'd put him ahead of Odom.
I mean, I didn't factor in Fordham, really. I thought we were more looking on the, you know, the national level.
Yeah, better than me. I stopped at 7.
It was tough. I mean, these, to me, separating 8 through 14, Lance, was really, really difficult.
That is amazing, though, that we had the top 7.
It really is.
D. Will, I would have Kirby 3. He has more rings as an assistant coach.
There's no doubt that as a coordinator, there's nobody on this list more accomplished than Kirby Smart. You cannot argue that one.
First down.
We've talked about Joe Burrow, the transfer from Ohio State to be LSU's next quarterback. Will he surpass the passing yardage of last year's LSU quarterback, who is also a transfer from the Big Ten, Danny Etling?
Etling's second year at LSU, and I think he was a little underrated last year. Not great, but I'm going to say no. You had a better offensive coordinator last year, Matt Canada, although it was dysfunctional, than what you get this year in Steve Ensminger. I think Burrow can be good. I don't think he'll surpass that number.
In 2,463 yards, he'd have to start almost right away to surpass that, right?
I mean, you're questioning whether he's the starter in week one against Miami.
I mean, I do think it's a question right now. The guy is getting in awful late. He just made his decision the other day. We're past spring. You're into summer practices. Is he going to win that job in 20 practices?
And you're losing your best wide receiver.
Yeah.
I just know if I'm Joe Burrow, and I think he's got 2 years to play, if I remember correctly, I don't choose a place. I don't think I can be the starter. So somebody has told him along the way that he can win this job.
Told Brandon Harris that too, right?
He did. He did. I'll take more than Danny Etling at 2,463.
Second down.
Better chance of happening this year and next year in the seasons, and this is assuming LeBron does indeed depart Cleveland. His team that he goes to does not make the playoffs, or Tua Tagovailoa does not start the Iron Bowl for a reason other than an injury.
Oh, I don't see either one of these, but I'll say Tua, I guess. Jalen Hurts does something miraculous in the offseason. Tua doesn't play well in the month of September or October. I don't know. There's no way LeBron goes to another destination without knowing it's ready-made for at least making a championship.
I was going to ask this question differently to you, Lance. Give me a team he could go to where you didn't think he would make the playoffs.
So let's say that he goes to Los Angeles because of all the other endeavors outside of basketball, and he goes with a Paul George, and there's a massive injury to a Brandon Ingram or a Paul George.
They couldn't make the playoffs?
I'm trying to figure out a way. Injuries are going to take part in either one of these, though.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way either one of these happens without injury.
Memphis is probably the worst team in the NBA this year, right?
Yeah.
You put him on Memphis, they make the playoffs next year.
Probably.
I don't think there's a team bad enough you could put him on that they wouldn't make the playoffs. So I would say the better chance is Tua doesn't start.
Third down.
Neither happens, as is always the answer in four downs.
Right. You brought this to my attention this morning, Brown. Michael Arnott, is that how you say it?
I do not know. Never heard of him before this weekend. It's a remarkable story, though.
He is a web.com golfer who shot a combined 55 on 9 holes in 2 days.
He had a 27 on Thursday with a bogey on the ninth, by the way, to shoot a 27.
Well, I bet he could do some hustling at the local country club, couldn't he?
And then he had a 28 the next day just to double down on it. It's crazy.
So what's the college football equivalent of that particular achievement?
That's got to be a 400-yard passing day, 20 catch day for a receiver, 200-yard rushing.
And back-to-back games?
Basically. Yeah, probably.
Doing
that
in back-to-back games would be the equivalent?
I was going to say it would be the equivalent of scoring a touchdown, kicking an onside kick, getting that, play action, scoring a touchdown, and then getting a pick six on the next play, all in a sequence. There are four great plays to flip the script of the game.
The dude shot a 27 and a 28 in back-to-back days.
Well, there has to be a bogey in there somewhere, though, because he did have the one
bogey.
That's
true. You got to have a turnover at something, yes.
Well, they let him run a play.
I guess so.
Fourth down.
Fourth down question. Is it a given that Billy Cannon, the legend of LSU, is placed on their Mount Rushmore of all-time athletes? Now, we're not going coaches.
Yeah, let's talk this out. I would assume because he's your only Heisman winner that he would be on there. Shaq is definitely going to be
100%.
On there.
Absolutely. Maravich is 100%.
Maravich is 100%. I mean, Chris Jackson would get a lot of argument, but I don't know if he's there. Maravich and Shaq are the only ones that I know 100%, and I guess Cannon would have to be.
I was trying to think of this, though, Lance. They've got a proud baseball history there. Who is the best baseballer from there?
Ben McDonald was the first overall pick.
Yeah, but I don't know if you...
Who was the kid? Was it Walker that hit the walk-off home run?
No, Todd Walker was great. Warren Morris.
Yeah, but he played in the majors, but I don't think he was ever considered a great player.
I don't know if I put him on Mount Rushmore, but I'd have the statue of him doing this outside the stadium, right?
No, I probably would be... You'd probably put Saban on there, right?
That's a good point.
If you include coaches now...
Then it would be Saban, Shaq, Maravich, and Billy Cannon.
Oh, I don't know. I honestly don't think they would put Saban on in front of Skip Bertman. I think LSU fans would go Skip Bertman before they would go Saban.
I'd just go Skip Bertman, too. Yeah.
Well, and because of the loyalty.
Yeah. And he's more LSU, yeah.
But I think Billy Cannon would have to be on there.
Yeah, if it's just players, those three, and then the debate for that fourth spot would run really, really deep.
Do you do a skinny Shaq face, though?
Yeah, you got to do LSU Shaq.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was skinny and could run the floor.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.